When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, let's start with our weekly game of Spot the Kieran. Where are you?
I'm at Timpers.
Are you in Timpers?
At present, yes.
Is that what we're officially calling it, Timpers?
Absolutely.
Okay.
If you want to piss off a northerner, call it with a really southern version of its proper name.
Kieran, I piss off enough northerners by getting their town location wrong. It's a weekly occurrence. Kieran, we're going to start with a shout out. We're not normally that sort of a pod, Kieran. Other pods would do a shout out because a child had been born to one of our listeners, or more likely to one of our listeners, a grandchild had been born. Well, we do a shout out if an exam had passed. Again, for most of our listeners, that would be a prostate exam. But we're doing a shout out to Jim Peacock, who sent us a very proud message. Jim Peacock, hello, Jim. Jim sent us a message to say that he acquired his Price of Football shirt just the other day, and he wore it last night for the first time to play five-a-side. And in his words, Jim scored a hat-trick of worldies, and he's putting it down to the shirt. So if you want to score a hat-trick of worldies, obviously I'm allowing for a bit of male exaggeration here, Kieran, and so I think one of them probably was a tap-in, like Neil Shipley's.
They all count.
Like Neil Shipley's tap-in at Wembley. Oh, it wasn't at Wembley, it was in Cardiff, to win us the playoff, which is now a 35-yard volley, obviously. But Jim, well done. Congratulations to you. And I suppose, Kieran, it's Newsday, and I suppose congratulations to Southend as well. Although I have to say, Kieran, it seems more like a temporary stop to their problems at Southend, Kieran. It doesn't have the feel of a permanent ending, does it, unfortunately?
Yes, it's a bit like it's Southend sort of turned into EastEnders.
Yeah.
And every week it sort of you've got that drum roll. And the what's going to happen next? So the good news, and let's start off with the good news. I think as predicted,
yes.
Ron Martin, the owner, played his game of brinkmanship, and the day before the court hearing was due to take place, all of a sudden, £1.4 million of working capital appeared and money to pay off the tax man. So it looks like the tax debt has been settled. For now, staff have been paid their wages for January and February.
Is that all staff, Kieran? Because there was some talk that the players had been paid, but some of the actual workers at the club hadn't yet been paid.
Oh, right. Oh, that could be the case. I mean, I was talking to somebody today who knew somebody from the youth team who had been paid all up to date. So,
right, okay.
So that was a positive. But trying to work out what Ron Martin is going to do next, and the chances are is that it's going to involve not paying some people. And it does appear to be some sort of glorified game for him, which is disturbing, because these are people that have got rent to pay, they've got mouths to feed, they've got standing orders and direct debits, and their finances being hit by this. We don't know the extent of Southend United finances, because Ron Martin has chosen to break the law and not publish any accounts since 2019. That is a criminal offence, by the way. That's a breach of the Companies Act. And the thing is, you get a fairly paltry fine, and you just, I think he's just quite happy to take the fine. I know some people from Companies House do listen to this. They're just if you do, just check. Yeah, Southend United Football Club, and perhaps have a word in his ear, because he's he's holding everybody to contempt. Yeah. You know, first of all, his statutory responsibilities as a shareholder, as a director of the company. Secondly, HMRC by delaying and delaying. But most of all, in my opinion, his employees, and yeah, that's playing and non-playing staff. And eventually it will catch up because you very quickly run out of goodwill. And it's, yeah, I've always taken the view that be nice to people and they'll be nice to you back. And he's not that type of person, and it's very disappointing. So we don't know what will happen. You know, Matt Slater, who's our friend at The Athletic, he's a big Southend United yeah. fan. You know, it's his club. He did a really good report 10 days ago for sort of, you know, what they thought was going to be their last away fixture. And anybody that attended these matches, and I think you and I have probably been pretty close to them ourselves, there's defiance and there's anger, but there is sadness. And I just don't understand the motives of the person who stands to make a lot of money out of Southend United if his proposals for development go ahead. Whether this is all part of an attempt to strong arm the council into accelerating the process through which Roots Hall can be converted into properties which he can then sell at a profit. I don't know, but it's shameful and tawdry in my view.
Well, also, Matt Slater sent a very funny tweet today saying that HMRC are fast becoming their local derby. Now the twice a year meeting with HMRC. And again, there's a lot of talk from Southend journalists and BBC Essex today that the money he could make if Roots Hall was developed for housing and they get the permission to move to this new ground. It's the utter contempt he shows for fans as well, Ken. I remember that 2 months running, fans chipped in to pay wages of staff at the club. But trying to pay, I don't know if there is an opposite of devil's advocate, angel's advocate, trying to be very generous to a man who doesn't deserve it. There are one or two people saying, well, maybe this time it wasn't brinkmanship, it just interest rates are so high at the moment that you managed to get a loan. People were talking about £5 million. But he didn't want to take it out on earlier in the year because of the amount of interest he'd have to pay. So he arranged for it to be paid the day before. But I mean, that really is being generous to him, Kieran, isn't it? Because
that is, and also potentially that he'll be paying interest on the late payment of taxes. And the fact that it had to go to a High Court hearing means that he will have had to go and pay legal fees for his representatives. And it's. I think it's highly unlikely that all of this just happened to arrange a loan 24 hours before it was acquired. There's too many coincidences when it comes to Southend and late payments and just avoiding winding up.
Well, it's good news for the wine, Prosecco and champagne sellers of Southend and the Essex area tonight, at least. So at least Southend fans can sleep comfortably in their bed for a few nights. I don't know if you've seen the Belgian equivalent of EastEnders, Kieran. It's called Ostenders. not as much happens, but the beer is much, much better. In other news stories, Kieran, the Premier League and the EFL are not quite sitting in a tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G, Tracy and Kieran style, but they're chatting at least.
Yes. The day after the white paper was announced, There was a scheduled meeting, by all accounts, between the Premier League and the EFL. It did take place. I believe it was cordial. And they've now got effectively a mandate going to come through legislation in due course. Now, I suspect what will happen is that the Premier League will once again prevaricate. We'll wait for the legislation. We'll hope that its pets will try to dilute and put down the proposals. And for some reason, the Times now appears to be the go-to vehicle through which the Premier League's lobbyists, the Institute of Economic Affairs, the Cato Institute, a few journalists there, which is surprising because there's some other really good stuff coming out from the Times, from other journalists, but there's at least one there who's just being cantankerous about everything to do. And you know, the claim that there's going to be 200 employees
at
the regulator. I've been in contact because I thought that sounded a bit strange to me. And I think the word bollocks was the reply when I said, I'm a light touch regulator, if you know. And that sounded to me completely inappropriate, and that they just said, no, it's that is news to us as well. So there's scare stories being put out. The Premier League is trying to come out with, you know, things such as the law of unintended consequences. Well, what are the unintended consequences of having a fan golden share in relation to protecting the badge and the colours of the shirt and the home ground? What are the unintended consequences of having a slightly more beefed up owners and directors test? What are the unintended consequences of getting, well, not getting rid of, but, you know, certainly trying to reduce the cliff edges, which encourage overspending at all areas of football? So, I can't see this. It's very passive aggressive. You can see that there are people connected to historic political campaigns saying, well, this is the route we'd go down, and we're not going to cut. And when you see the criticisms coming out, it's never from Spurs and Manchester United and Liverpool, because they've all been tainted by the being the sneaky six.
Yeah.
So they tried to get other clubs to do it. So all very Machiavellian. My understanding is the Premier League, its biggest offer was to increase its distribution from 16% to 19%. The EFL wants 25%. My view is that we need a five division solution, because anything which makes one particular area of the game substantially better off, given that you can't increase the size of the pie, you've got to take a bit more care cutting it. So I don't think much progress will be made, because the Premier League says, well, you know, why give 19% or 20% now if we can delay it for a couple of years, because the legislation probably won't be passed until 2024. It therefore won't affect, you know, possibly before the 25-26 season. This gives us an opportunity to sit on things with the current distribution model and pretend that we are willing to give up a bit more. And then they'll say, right, we'll now go to arbitration, and perhaps we'll come to some form of solution there.
It's in the very nature of unintended consequences, Kieran, that you can't predict unintended consequences, can you?
Yes.
In the same way that I once asked referee Graham Pohl, he's a friend of mine, and I make no apology for that, I once asked referee Graham Pohl whether he subconsciously gave decisions in Manchester United's favour at Old Trafford, and he said, well, I wouldn't know, would I, if I was doing it subconsciously? So in which case, Graham, you must be doing it deliberately. But you can only assume, Kieran, people like the Institute of Economic Affairs, who are described normally as right-wing think tanks, I don't understand why they're even getting involved in Premier League football, unless, as you say, they are the pet of a Premier League owner or one. I can't see what their issue is. It's not something they've spent the last 5 or 6 years talking about, and then suddenly this new regulator comes in. And I mean, God knows what it would have been like if it had been introduced by a Labour MP. I mean, it's introduced
by grief.
But it's introduced by, as she said herself in the interview, to somebody compared Tracy Crouch to Mao. Tracy Crouch.
Yes.
She's a good indication, as Jess Phillips once said, that most of the work in Parliament is done by cross-party groups, sensible grown-up adults who work together and ignore their party political lines. And this is what's happened with Tracy Crouch and other MPs. I don't see why the Institute of Economic Affairs in particular is sticking their beak in.
Hmm. But then if you Google Institute of Economic Affairs funding, you get an organisation which, if the stories do have any credence, is it's funded by Big Oil, it's funded by people from by the gambling industry and so on. And it was also very closely linked to the previous Conservative regime under Liz Truss. I believe it was very fulsome in praise of the quasi Kwarteng budget. Which is coming to a mortgage near you, probably very soon to many of our listeners.
Yeah, tell me about it. I don't think Liz Truss lasted long enough to call it a regime. It was a reg. But the EFL announced some quite decent news in terms of revenue just now, didn't they, Kieran?
Yes, so EFL have published their own accounts, and they generated £191 million of income in 21-22, which by second division standards of global football is very, very good indeed.
Yeah.
The problem, and this is not just a problem for the EFL, this is a problem for the rest of European football, is that it's great, and then till you compare it to the Premier League, which is generating £3 billion. And the biggest success, the Premier League has been amazingly successful. And you've got to give credibility to the people there, to the clubs that have gone out on the pre-season tours to spread the word, to the people that have gone out to the broadcasters and said, yeah, we've got an amazing product and we've got a competitive product. The trouble is the rate of growth has been so spectacular. It has left everybody else behind. This is the challenge. There's no reason why the Premier League couldn't be just a wee bit more generous. It does point out it gives more money to the other tier of football than any other institute or any other organisation. But I think that there is scope to take things a bit further. The EFL have also put their TV deal, which generates of that £191 million of total revenue, £119 comes from the Sky deal. They put it out to tender. It does look as if there will be quite a lot of interest, and potentially they could double the revenues, which will be fantastic. And I think ITV, DAZN, some of the OTT broadcasters do seem genuinely interested because there's a lot of matches. What they've got to be careful of is that they don't cannibalize their own product, in the sense that if they give away too many matches and if they give away the 3 p.m. kickoffs, will this result in a decline in attendances? And therefore, what you gain in terms of a greater broadcasting audience is lost through lower match day attendances. So it's a balancing act, but they do seem quite bullish and we've just had the Carabao Cup. It was Manchester United versus Newcastle. It got good figures there. The two clubs who, as we know, have big fan bases. These numbers are good, and that money gets distributed to the clubs, which helps them to survive. And that's what we want. We want a successful 20. We want a successful 92, and we want a successful National League as well.
Yeah, talking of broadcasting, okay, as we speak, we're about 10 minutes away from two live FA Cup games kicking off, one on ITV and one on BBC. I mean, there are few enough live games on terrestrial TV as it is domestically, and now we've got two on at the same time, and there's another one on ITV4, which seems a little... I mean, I know they can't really split them up because the games have all been played midweek, which is, I'm sure, the broadcaster's not particularly happy, but it's an odd situation, isn't it? Tracy Crouch, when we spoke to her last week, told us of some of the opposition she expects. Mm. But it seems that the regulator of English football, Kieran, faces an existential threat from a source we weren't expecting, and it's an old friend of ours.
Yes, yay for FIFA, we all cry. Yay for FIFA. So again, this is, I don't know how much credibility to give to this, but it was, again, came through one of the newspapers. And FIFA, to give FIFA credit, do have a responsibility to ensure that there is no political interference in football. And that's good. Okay, the recommendations of the fan-led review, not the politicians-led review, because if politicians do start to get involved, then there'll be winners and losers in terms of individual clubs, and then we get into a toxic mess. So I think the politicians are actually quite wise to not get involved in this. But there have been some claims that the proposals amount to political interference. But I would refer people to the tweet of our very good friend Nick DeMarco, who says, "I have considered this point and doubt that the proposals as drafted in the white paper will directly engage the prohibition on government interference in the FIFA statutes." So I think that, once again, it's scaremongering from the Premier League, trying to take down as many elements of the recommendations as possible. To be fair to FIFA, they have said nothing themselves, and there is bound to be speculation. And also, it has to be said, people have a right to question the wisdom of the independent regulator. And, I've contacted, because I did say a few snarky things about somebody from the Cato Institute, and I offered him an opportunity to come on the show, to which they did not reply, which is a shame. But I don't really see how this can be deemed to be political interference, given that it's an appointment which is not going to be of a politician. There will be scrutiny by Parliament, but then there's scrutiny of the Football Association. You know, that people from the Football Association, people from the Premier League, people from the EFL, they all had to attend a parliamentary committees following the demise of Berry. That wasn't political interference. That was an investigation into the sad loss of a part of the fabric of English football. And trying to persuade people that there is far greater political involvement and there is government interference is simply wrong, because that's not the case. Is there a potential political benefit to the government in introducing this legislation? Yeah, I suspect there is, because it's the nature of the policy. It's one which engages with people, and people who are football fans are also voters. But it is not the same as the government trying to dictate anything to do with the operational level of football, anything to do with England team, anything to do with grassroots, apart from the fact that, in my opinion, there's insufficient investment by central and local government into health and sporting facilities in the country as a whole. But that's a completely separate question.
Was it on this show that you were snarky to the Cato Institute? Because if so, I really must stop doing crosswords while you're answering questions.
No. It was, funny enough, once again, it was a column in the Times, which does appear to be organisation number one, which is a shame, because people like Martin Ziegler are absolutely brilliant in the type of stuff they put out, and he's not one of the bad guys.
There is talk here, and if you remember the 5 days of madness around the European Super League, and of course you do, because you didn't see the Baroness for 5 days, because you were talking to the media. People were saying then, wiser people than me, that there were rumours that the government would step in to prevent a breakaway of English clubs, whereas people said, well, FIFA would view that as absolute political interference, which you can kind of understand, but that is very different to this, because as you say, this is not particularly a political appointment as such, is it?
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I can't remember how many prime ministers ago we were when Super League came. But Boris Johnson said he would have a nuclear option in respect of stopping English clubs joining the Premier League, and go as far as changing the LBW rules, given his extensive knowledge of football. So, that wouldn't be political interference. It would you could simply change some of the legislation. That nobody wants to go down that route. And also, if the owners of Manchester United want the club to leave the Premier League, they presently have the facilities to do that. And that, for me, is a cause for concern.
Now, Kieran, you know about my love of Laurel Hardy, my passion for Laurel Hardy. Well, one of their later films, perhaps the only really decent one of the later films, was called Blockheads. And in it, Oliver is told by a neighbour about a story he's reading in the paper about a soldier who didn't realise that the First World War had ended and had been parading up and down in a trench for the last 24 years, whereas Ollie says, who could be that stupid? Looks at the paper, and it's a picture of Stan beaming as he does. And then he does about I think six times he goes to leave, goes back to check the paper. Such is my geographical paranoia lately, Kieran, that I've been doing that with an atlas all day just to make sure that the next two clubs we're talking about are in the West Country. So I can say we're taking a trip to the West Country, Kieran, and I'm fairly certain no fans of either of these clubs would get humpty if I say we're going to the West Country. And the first of our West Country stories is the end of a mini saga, really, isn't it?
So the good news about Yeovil Town is that they've still got a club to support. The club has been acquired by a company called SU Glovers. So that is the football club. SU Glovers Limited is a company which has been set up for £1. It may have additional resources. It apparently is owned or controlled by a guy called Matt Ugler and his mum. Matt has been very successful in business, so he's got resources. And he talks about having stewardship of the club, but it's a bit vague as to exactly what his plans are. But that's what happens in terms of the ownership of the football club. But the football club itself does not own the land. So we have a separate agreement in which the local council appears to have bought the stadium, i.e. the property assets, and a lot of the surrounding land as well, for a total of £2.8 million. And it's then going to rent the stadium back to the football club. So you might say, well, that sounds all right. You know, that's sort of, you know, the council protecting the football club. The Yeovil Town former owner, who is a gentleman called Scott Priestnell, it appears, and here the work of the fantastic people at Glovercast, who are the club sort of, you know, the fan base who got their own podcast. They've got a really good website where they keep an eye on things on behalf of the fans. It looks as if Scott Priestnell might have some form of buyback option for the property and the land surrounding. Now, at present, there's not definitive planning permission for a load of retail or a load of residential. But part of the reason why the council's got involved, because it feared that the football club might be put into administration by Scott Priestnell. And this appears to be an opportunity for him to go through the right processes and then get planning permission to convert the land into properties on which he could then make a large killing. And are we saying pound shop Ron Martin? In the sense that, you know, that's what Ron Martin wanted to do. He wanted to convert the football ground at Southend into properties. So is this simply just buying an individual time to which they can then get planning permission? There's no evidence that Scott Priestnell wants to put the football stadium itself into some form of alternative property. But anybody that's ever been to Yeovil and has tried to get away from the car park following a match will confirm that it's an absolute bugger at the best of times, because it's a fairly tight area. And I think there are plans for something like 250 properties in the land surrounding the football ground. So it would really hem things in. And you know what is the council going to do? Because local taxpayers can say rightly that yes, we are sympathetic to Yeovil Town Football Club, but there are many other businesses which are not being protected in such a way. So they'll be in an ideal world be wanting the council to sell the property back. And at what price? Is it going to be at a profit to the council to take into account the new planning permission? We don't know. Will all of the profits come to this gentleman, Scott Priestnell, who has put some funding in, but seems to have a breakdown in the relationship with the fan base, and is not the first person to do so. So it's good that we've still got the football club. It's potentially good that we've got new owners, though the new owners, I think they would. If I was to give him some any counselling, I would say go out and communicate, engage with the fans, come on the podcast of the local fan groups, come on to Price of Football if you really want. Yeah, we're always happy to talk to anybody and to give them the opportunity to express what their plans are for the club. But we've got past one set of uncertainties and we appear to have replaced them with another.
Yes, one to keep an eye on. I'm sure this is a joke, Kieran, that Yeovil Town fans have heard many times, but I heard it recently and in a context that made me laugh very much. I won't name them, Kieran, but these are people you've met in the Pawson's Arms, one of whom has recently come out of a relationship with a partner I could best describe as feisty. And then he told us that he had a new girlfriend that he just met, and she was very nice, and she was a Yeovil Town fan. To which my mate Gaz, if you haven't met, he went, "Oh, so this one's a glover, not a fighter."
Which
I thought, it got the Lord's round of applause for a four.
It should. Absolutely. That's an absolute gem.
It was a David Gower shot through extra cover. That was. The other West Country, we spoke in our last pod, Kieran, a Reading fan told us about an urban myth in Reading. That Reading released their kits very late for financial reasons, but another team in the West Country have released their kit already.
Yes, this is Bristol City, and we covered this story before Christmas in relation to Hummel and Hummel's unique distribution agency had gone into financial trouble, and this affected quite a few clubs who had Hummel kit. So I think Millwall and Coventry and quite a few other clubs were affected, and they weren't able to sell their kit, and they haven't been able to sell their kit since. So what Bristol City have done, they've signed a deal with O'Neill's, who are Ireland's biggest sort of domestic manufacturer of sporting apparel, and they've said, right, we're going to release the 2023-2024 kit now. So the players, I think, are going to start to wear it from within about a couple of weeks. And as soon as it comes off the loom, then Bristol City fans will be able to get it ASAP. So they will have the opportunity because there are people's birthdays coming up. There are events, and you want you want Dave 60 on for Dave on his 60th birthday to get that kit. We've all seen them, fair play to Bristol City for being proactive and not just hanging around with the old kit for the rest of the season, but saying we've got a deal and let's get it sold. So good luck to them.
What a pleasing image that was, Kieran. The shirts coming off the loom. like the old timey days. Yeah. And occasionally, Kieran, when you've been with somebody for a long time, like I have with Ali, you discover something about them that you think, why did I not know that from the start? And it's there's a wedlock stand at Bristol City, or there used to be a wedlock stand back in the day, and it turns out that Ali is distantly related to the wedlock involved, who played for Bristol City.
Oh,
yeah, there you go.
Well,
yeah, the look she gave, it came up via a very roundabout situation. The look she gave me when I said I didn't know that indicated clearly that I did know that and had forgotten.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager, or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Kieran, I think we've probably had 2 whole weeks without any sort of discussion about socios or digital or anything of the like, and I believe that 2-week period is about to end.
Yes, the hiatus is gone. So we are looking at Internazionale, who proudly announced a deal worth the thick end of $100 million with Digital Bits, some crypto NFT bunch of do-gooders. And they proudly presented their logo on the front of the Inter shirts, which, as we know, should only ever have the word Pirelli on the front.
Indeed.
It was worth $25 million a year. And then on the 1st of November, Inter said, we're not going ahead with that deal. And all of a sudden, the logo ceased to be there. And you go, well, that didn't last very long, did it? And it now transpires that not only have Digital Bits decided that they don't want part of the deal, they've not paid a penny. So they have had free advertising for the start of the season. And, yeah, blow me, shiver me timbers and so on. A company from an industry which is unregulated, easy to manipulate, and highly volatile, where lots and lots of participants have gone bust in the relatively short time in which it's been in existence, has itself seemed to have a bit of a cash crisis and therefore has not paid for the rights to sponsor. So, yeah, this will hit Inter significantly because they would have had the deal with somebody else. They may not have got quite as much, but they'd have got a substantial amount of money. And I think, once again, it shows the precarious nature of getting into bed with the overall elements of the crypto industry, which are very quick to show their own benefits or their own supposed benefits, but seem very reluctant to actually part with hard cash in order to honour their side of a contract. So, yeah, once again, shabby.
No, good, Kieran. I mean, it's not been the best season for Liverpool fans, but some good news for Liverpool vis-a-vis their league position with Manchester United.
Yes, in the financial league, Manchester United were the biggest revenue-generating football club in the Premier League from its inception in 1992-93 for every single season subsequent to that, until last season when they were overtaken by local rivals Manchester City. And Liverpool have just announced their accounts, or they've given a summary of their accounts, and they've overtaken Manchester United as well. partly due, of course, to winning two domestic cups. So therefore, yeah, they've had more matches. They also got to the Champions League final. I think Manchester United got as far as the last 16. And it is becoming more and more competitive because there's a gnat's whisker in terms of difference really now between these three clubs. They are very close, but City have nudged ahead and kept that position for 2 years. And once again, we refer to Ed Woodward, the former chief executive of Manchester United, who said, I think this was about 5 or 6 years ago, Manchester United does not have to win football matches in order to be successful off the pitch. Well, unfortunately, Ed, you know, and this is ironic given that Manchester United have just won a domestic trophy. They do, because if you're successful on the pitch, you pay your matches, you get more prize money, you get more bonuses from sponsors, and even Manchester United, which, you know, as a brand is pretty much unparalleled in my view. You know, Liverpool have got an amazing fan base in terms of its global appeal, but you know, I think even Liverpool fans will know that Manchester United has more people in more countries who claim to support the club. You've got to convert that into cash, and Liverpool have overtaken Manchester United. That situation may reverse itself, given that, you know, Manchester United are doing well on four fronts and they're making progress in the Europa League. Liverpool have got, I think it's fair to say, quite a task to get to the next round of the Champions League, but, you know, never say never. But so I think this does show that sponsors, commercial partners, and broadcasters, that they want to be associated with winners, and Manchester United, given the size of the club, Manchester United still has the biggest wage bill in the Premier League. They've got to start delivering trophies. Otherwise, there is danger. I don't think they'll become another Arsenal, and that's not a dig at Arsenal, but Arsenal have really fallen off the pedestal in terms of being at the top end of the revenue streams, and they were second behind Manchester United for many, many years, but they've now been overtaken by all of the other members of the Big Six. So it's a salutary lesson.
Yeah, just for newer listeners, Kieran, and for those Southend fans who are bathing in champagne, wondering how much the people on the other side of the fence make. What sort of revenue figures are we talking about per year for Liverpool, Man United, Manchester City?
So as far as Liverpool are concerned, they have generated £594 million. City are just over £600 million, and Manchester United, I think, around about £570 million. So, you know, there's not a lot of difference between them. For a club like Southend, we're probably talking in League Two, you're probably talking somewhere in the region of £3 to £4 million. So it would take Southend, you know, 150 years to earn the same amount of money as Liverpool did last season.
I should Southend fans be pointing out they wish they were in League Two, Kieran, but they're in the National League at the moment, aren't they?
Sorry, their most recent accounts would be the 2022 accounts.
Oh, I do beg your pardon, Kieran.
As accountants, we always look in the rearview mirror.
There's a Jurassic Park joke in there somewhere, Kieran. Dinosaurs, but I want to finish and watch the football. We've spoken quite a lot recently, Kieran, you in particular, as somebody who spends a lot of time at Old Trafford, about the need for that ground to be developed and the cost that it will incur. But there's been some potential good news for Man United this week on that front.
Yes, and as always, it's potential, but it might come at a price. So there's an American hedge fund called Elliott, and they have said they are willing to help the redevelopment of Old Trafford. In my opinion, if whoever is in charge of Manchester United has any sense, you bite the bullet, you knock down what you have at present, and you make it a 21st century development as opposed to a glorified Jenga or Lego model,
yeah.
i.e. buying, building bits on top of bits on top of bits. This hedge fund has said it's willing to fund the redevelopment, even if it doesn't actually get involved in the takeover. And it could be that they get involved with the Glazer family. And Manchester United's share price has fallen probably the best part of 30% in a week. One of the Glazers turned up to the Carabao Cup final. They've not been seen watching the club for about 3 or 4 weeks. And it looks as if the bids for Manchester United, which I'm picking up vibes of, and they're not groovy, of around about $4.5 billion for Manchester United, which in my view is more than a fair price, but it doesn't meet the expectations of the Glazers. And it looks as if the Glazers are potentially going to dig their heels in now, and they might go down the same route as Manchester City and the Liverpool owners, FSG, and sell off a small proportion of the club. It could be that two of the Glazers, I think it's Joel and Avram, who are the two of the six siblings who are most keen on Manchester United as a business. They will keep on their shares. They might be able to persuade their siblings to sell some of their shares to Joel and Avram, but I don't think they can afford to buy out the rest of the family. But it could be there'll be sort of a combination in such a way that Joel and Avram, they want to have 51% of the votes. Now, that's not the same as 51% of the shares, because under the Manchester United share scheme, if your surname is Glazer, for every one share you have 10 votes. And if your surname is not Glazer, you end up with just one vote. And if the Glazers sell the shares to people outside of the family, you have that dilution in terms of votes. So, yeah, they could end up with owning, I've not crunched the numbers, they could end owning 30% of the shares but still having 51% of the votes or something like that. The reason why the share price has gone down is the markets, who had hoped that if there was a Qatari bid, then the Qatari owners would offer to buy all of the shares in Manchester United. And if so, that would normally have to be at a price similar to that was offered to the Glazers. If that doesn't go ahead, then Manchester United shares simply aren't worth $27 at which they were trading a week ago. So people have started taking profits, as tends to be the case here. So if Elliott do get involved, then they could lend the money. Remember, Manchester United already has a substantial amount of debt. Yeah. So you could have debt added on to existing debt, which means interest charges would go up. I've always said, I personally don't have an issue with debt. It's all about meeting debt schedule repayments as and when they fall due. Spurs have got a lot of debt, but they're generating a lot of money. I think Manchester United could easily sell out 90,000 seats every weekend at Old Trafford. And if new owners came in, they could organise that in such a way that a lot of those seats would go to, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, could go to day trippers who are prepared to pay premium prices, could also go to the hospitality trade, who are very, very lucrative, and Manchester United's £100 million a year that it presently makes from matchday income could be close to doubled with the right pricing structure. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm in favour of such a pricing structure, because I share a dressing room when I was playing cricket with lads from Ermston and Gorton and so on. And they are, in my view, the true Manchester United fans. But we also have to operate in the business world of 2023.
Is there another way, Kieran, that this hedge fund, Elliott, could help fund Old Trafford's redevelopment other than loans? And what's in it for them, if there is?
What's in it for them is Manchester United is a cash cow, so they know that from a lending point of view is it's very, very low risk.
Right, okay.
And therefore you can sign up for a 20 or 30 year loan, and on the back of that, you get guaranteed money coming in. Potentially you might be able to do something with those debts in due course. You might be able to convert them into shares, so you could end up with a proportion of a very successful business. If Manchester United or whoever it is manages to unlock the fact that the club claims to have 1.1 billion followers,
yeah.
and all you've got to do is, Manchester United get 55 pence per fan per year. You convert that to a pound or £2, and you've got a completely different business. But doing that has been something which has banjaxed everybody at all clubs for the last 20 years since we started to become really addicted to being online.
And this notion, Kieran, that each Glazer share is worth 10 votes, that's perfectly natural in business, is it? And the people who buy the other shares are aware that that's the case?
Yeah, yes, they are. It is far more common in the US than it is in European markets. It was originally quite common with tech stocks. So we saw that with Google and Facebook. So Mark Zuckerberg, for example, he has shares which carry 10 votes each, and the shares which are traded on the markets in New York in terms of Facebook, they have one vote each. And this is a way for companies which have been set up by individuals, for those individuals to keep power and control over the company whilst also maximizing the amount of revenue which is generated through taking the clubs to market, or sorry, the companies to market.
Kieran, I'm going to go out on a limb here, because Manchester United Women published their latest accounts last week, and I'm going to guess they're probably some way behind Manchester United Men.
That limb has been well and truly achieved. Yes, Manchester United made £5 million worth of revenue compared to over 100 times of that by Manchester United itself. But it's itself is quadrupling revenues in the year. And then when you delve into the numbers, it turns out that the vast majority of that income is coming from commercial deals. So women's football, it is in an interesting position in that we are seeing crowds being broken this season, especially when there are local derbies taking place. And it's taking place. We've seen it at the Etihad, we've seen it at Old Trafford, we've seen it at the Emirates, and so on. And we're getting some pretty big crowds. But you then got to get the pricing right. And I think the danger in women's football is that if you sell the tickets too cheap, then people feel that the product's not worthwhile. And if you start selling tickets at £5, how do you then next season charge £12 for them, which is perhaps a more appropriate price? So there is, I wouldn't say it's an existential problem, but there is an issue which is genuinely causing challenges for the people in charge of the women's game in terms of individual clubs. About, you want to maximise the number of people attending and you want to get the maximum amount of money from them. But the women's game is at a different price point to the men's game. And what that price point is, nobody at this present moment is quite sure.
These are not happy times, Kieran, for QPR fans. They're the only West London club not in the Premier League. I don't think there's many years you could say that. They're not doing particularly well in the Championship. They've got a new manager and they've also lost a lot of money recently.
Yeah, they lost the thick end of £500,000 a week, and this
a week.
This is the lunacy of life in the Championship, because they are not big spenders by Championship standards. But if you're spending £125 on wages for every £100 that comes through the door, then you've got a problem. And the vast majority of clubs in that division are in that mess. clubs coming down from the Premier League with parachute payments do have an advantage. Some people argue that that's an unfair advantage. Some people say, well, it's, you know, I was talking to somebody senior at a club that was relegated recently, and he says, yes, we acknowledge that it's an advantage, but the fact that our fans still have a club to support, we would have gone bust had we not had the parachute payments. And, you know, I've said this before, I think the parachute payments are for too long and I think they're too high, but I don't think that they should be abolished. And it's also the fact that there are some very wealthy owners of clubs in the Championship who are willing for their clubs to lose that 15, 20 million pounds a week. Sorry, 15, 20 million pounds a year. And that continues year in, year out. And it's you then look at the total losses being made over a number of years, and you know, you end up in the hundreds of millions. And you think, well, what exactly have the owners got out of this for all of the grief that they probably get from fans as well? Because ultimately the fans want the club to get promoted, and QPR aren't. Yeah, they're not challenging the runners and riders on a regular basis, and yet they've got the worst of both worlds. They're losing money and they're not playing the football or making the progress that the fans would hope for.
Our penultimate news story, Kieran, takes us to Blackburn Rovers, who are spending a lot of money on a player that's not allowed to play for them.
Yes, this is a player called Lewis O'Brien. And the thing about the transfer window is the transfer window closes at either, you know, it's normally 11 p.m. or midnight at the end of January. And, you know, in my view, it's a bit like catching a train or a plane. You know, when it pulls out of the station, it's gone. Whether you're 30 seconds late, 3 seconds late, or half a second late, if it's set off, it's set off. Blackburn are trying to sign Lewis O'Brien, or have been trying to sign Lewis O'Brien, and it looks as if their paperwork went to the EFL. Now, the EFL are saying, well, it was after the deadline, and therefore, sorry, yeah, you've had the whole month of January in which to sign the player. My understanding that Blackburn's owners, the Venkies, who are quite surreal. The more stories I hear about the Venkies and the way they operated, the more baffled I get. They subsidise the club to a huge extent, but they like brinkmanship in a similar way to Ron Martin. And I don't know whether they were trying to extract a slightly better deal for themselves in the signing of Lewis O'Brien. I think it's a loan signing. And they said, oh, we're not going to go do it. Yes, we will do it right at the very last minute. Get the paperwork through. And it looks as if the paperwork arrived too late. They're now saying, oh, we think it did arrive on time, or there were extenuating circumstances. And it looks like they're spending the thick end of 100 grand trying to prove that in terms of legal fees and launching the appeal. You know, if they'd any sense, they'd have tried to get the deal over the line a day or two earlier. You know, it's a bit like your tax return. You know, don't decide to submit it at 11:58 p.m. on the 31st of January just for the sheer joy of putting your tax in right at the very final moment. You don't actually gain anything. And if your internet goes down for a minute or two, then you end up paying a fine.
One thing I can say, Kieran, with some pride, is that my tax return always gets in on plenty of time. I feel it's my duty to cheer up the hardworking clerical people at the tax office by sending my tax return in. It's when they've got it that the problems start. But it's always always on time. Our last story, Kieran, takes us to three Scottish clubs, two of whom have fantastic kits, and one of whom has my favourite kit sponsor of the season on the front, which is Crunchy Carrot. So we've got Motherwell, Green at Morton, and the Crunchy Carrots, Falkirk.
Yes. I've said on quite a few occasions that Scottish football, in my view, in the main, is in a better position than English football because it doesn't have the cliff edges between divisions. And also, you know, let's be honest, we know who the top two teams are going to be in the Scottish Premiership. So therefore, clubs aren't incentivized to overspend because you're never going to be able to genuinely compete with Rangers and Celtic, because between those two clubs, they've got they spent, I think it was, I worked it out as 94% of all the transfer spend in Scottish football came from two clubs, which means it's a non-competitive league. So therefore, in general, if you're trying to operate in that environment, you say, right, we'll live within our means. I think Falkirk, however, did have a bad year, and they had to be dug out. We're seeing quite a few Scottish clubs bring out figures. Motherwell and Greenock, Motherwell are fan owned, so therefore they tend to operate within their means. Greenock Morton, again, reasonably okay. But there is a different mindset in Scottish football in the main. And this shows what can be achieved if the jeopardy of promotion and relegation is not as steep as we have it in the English game.
Yeah. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. That's very kind of you. And if you'd like to join them by making a small monthly contribution, you can do so by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. Yep. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. We will try to answer them on our Monday questions pod. In the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, thank you as always for the support of the show. That that siren in the background is hopefully not somebody stealing the Frank Sidebottom statue, which I'm fairly close to at present. If you want to support the show, engage with us, that's great. Thank you for all your emails, and we love to hear some tales of the kit. We even got somebody from Ohio in a kit at the weekend as well, which is fantastic. We're well chuffed. But there's another way of supporting the show, and that's to go on to your podcast app, and if you give us a review, it helps us in the charts. It doesn't matter what you say. So you could even say you would rather have the show presented by Nick Knowles and Amanda Holden to go down a more sort of populist route. Kevin and I, our egos, we can cope with it. We are two South London boys, we'd be fine with that. So,
yeah, it's very,
write whatever you want.
Very good at pointing, Nick Knowles. I urge you to watch his show, which is not a skill necessarily good for a podcast hosting. I like Amanda Holden. I can't recall off the top of my head what her pointing skills are like, but Nick Knowles, his pointing skills are second to none. Bye, everybody.
Excellent. Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.